Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Hey, it's Anna. This week, we are sharing an episode with you that I have never forgotten. It's a story that began in my inbox in Death, Sex, and Money's very first year, and then took some unexpected turns. I hope you enjoy it.
I realized while I was laying in bed trying to sleep how much fear I actually have.
This is Death, Sex, and Money, the show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. I'm Anna Sale. I often hear from guests after interviews, but this time was a little different.
I was awake most of the night, and what little I slept, I dreamt of this. This is hard to ask, but I'm asking. Please don't use my tape.
The day before, I talked to her for about an hour and a half. This all started months earlier when she reached out to me in an email after listening to one of our episodes.
I'm responding to your episode on cheating. As a sex worker, I play a role in cheating on a weekly basis.
She told me most of her clients are married.
Sometimes I think about the wives. I think about how they would feel if they knew where their husband was and what he was doing with me. Am I facilitating cheating? I guess so. Can I sleep at night? Mostly.
In this first email, she was fairly unapologetic about the benefits of her work. Her clients leave with their sexual needs fulfilled. She leaves with money. It's sex work, and it's illegal. We emailed back and forth, and she said she wanted to talk with me about what she does for a living, as long as her identity would be concealed. That's why the sound of her voice has been manipulated, and we're not using her real name. This is Anna.
Hi.
So I'm calling you Emma?
Yes, thank you.
Where did the name Emma come from?
I like simple names, and I think I'm somewhat traditional.
This was the first of several conversations between Emma and me. Talking about her work hasn't always been easy for Emma. At times, she wanted to scrap the episode, like in that morning after our first interview. But ultimately, she chose to share her story. And a reminder, she's a sex worker. So this episode is more sexually explicit than usual. Emma got into sex work after a divorce left her broke, and she had kids to raise.
I had a lot of savings, and that basically all got used up.
Emma had a job, but she wasn't bringing in enough. Then she met a woman who told her about a way to earn a lot more money.
She first told me she did sensual massage. I had no idea what she was talking about. And she told me, you know, she really opened up to me and shared her story with me, which was very similar. Had been married for 20 years, was going through a divorce. Her husband wasn't able, actually had completely lost his income, and they had 3 kids. And she just kind of realized, wow, okay, you know, this might help. And she let me know how much money she made the first year. This was at literally a time where within a month, I was not going to have any money.
How much did she tell you she had made?
Oh, I think she made somewhere between 150 and 200,000 her first year working.
And that's doing sensual massage? Like, what does that mean?
Well, it's not full service. It's not it doesn't involve intercourse.
No intercourse.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's massage that's very sensual.
Does that include oral sex?
It can. I think anybody can do whatever they want. If you were to go and Google sensual massage, it might not say oral sex, but it definitely happens. And it also definitely doesn't happen. It's really just depends on the person.
How long did you have to think about it to decide that this is something you were willing to do?
Not very long. I'm very proactive, and I'm just, you know, I just knew I had to do it. I had to do something, and it was a solution to my dilemma. This woman was really wonderful. She talked to me a lot about it, and she invited me to come in and watch a session. And then this person that I watched offered to be a client and let me just try a session. And so, you know, I kind of just kept doing, just kind of slowly getting in there and seeing how it felt and making sure that I could do it. And and I could.
Now Emma has a regular stable of clients. She doesn't have to see anyone she doesn't know. They're mostly men, and they meet her at a place she rents out for work.
Yeah, it's in an area where there are just a lot of people coming and going and not really paying attention to each other. It feels really safe.
So what are your boundaries? How do you describe that to a client?
Well, I say, you know, there's no full service.
And people know what that means.
Yes.
Okay.
I try and protect myself from, and you can hear even with the words I use, what it's like for me, you know, some of my own personal, my private areas, I really would prefer that they just stayed for me. And so touching and so forth. And that can be difficult, though. That's a hard boundary sometimes to keep.
So you like to give and not be...
I like to give. I like to touch. Yeah. Yeah. And not to... I mean, I love receiving massage. But, you know, talking about sexually, I don't really like to be sexually touched by other people other than my partner.
That's a really... Yeah. I imagine that can get... really potentially uncomfortable when you're thinking about, am I consenting to what's happening right now?
It, you know, this is hard for me to say because I don't want to be speaking for all sex workers. So it's hard for me to admit this part of it. But for me, personally, that part of it, I feel a little bit like I'm violating myself. Hmm. Because I am giving permission. I always give permission. I am never forced to do anything that I don't want to do. I make the choice myself. And there are times when I choose to let things happen to my body that I feel like I'm violating myself. And that's hard. That's the hard part. That's the really hard part.
And when it's mixed with money, I mean, I'm assuming that if you're going further than what you anticipated, does that usually lead to more money?
No, not directly. Not in that, oh, now I'm going to get more money today. It's more part of the relationship.
Was your gauge for what felt not comfortable, was it if you would get that creeping shame feeling afterwards?
I only feel shame when I talk to other people. I actually had this woman tell me, I started charging immediately what she charged, and she said, oh, well, are you doing this, this, and this? I said, no, I'm not doing that, that, and that. I don't want to do that, that, and that. That doesn't sound safe, or that's not what I want to do. And she said, well, they're never going to come back unless you do those things. And they're coming to you now because you're new, but you're not going to be able to sustain yourself unless you do those things. So I did those things for a little while. And
what's like a, what's an example? What are we talking about?
You know, like oral sex, allowing myself to be touched intimately, penetration, I guess, with fingers, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but oral is a big one. I think that there's probably a big kind of separation between who does that and who doesn't. And I came to realize I don't have to do that. I'm actually worth, I can ask for what I want and I can give what I want no matter what. And the people who accept that, that's who I'm going to work with.
How much does it cost?
I don't know if I'm comfortable sharing that. I'll tell you this, okay? I don't make anything like that woman that I told you about who I met in the beginning. I just do enough to get by. And then I have other work that I do that doesn't, you know, it's like piddly money.
I want to talk about guilt, which is how you opened your email to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you're very aware that your clients are in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, their partners don't know that they're there with you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
Sad. Really sad. I talk to my clients about, you know, this may sound awful, but sometimes they will open up to me and I'll coach them on, well, you know, what would you like your relationship to be like? And so many of my clients are coming to me and for one reason or another, they're in a relationship where they're not getting physical intimacy. They don't get hugged. Nobody hugs them. Nobody touches them. Nobody looks at them and says, you're amazing. And I get to do that. I get to give that to those people. And I love that.
Are you still doing it for the money?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't do it for any other reason. I mean, we all do our work for money. So that's just the way it is. But if I didn't have to do it, if it wasn't the best pay by far, just so above and beyond anything else that I can make in the time that I spend doing it, I wouldn't be doing this.
You're in a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a man?
Yeah.
So he's known the entire time that you're doing this work?
Yeah.
What's been hard in your relationship?
I think the hardest thing for us is just that there are things that I'm doing as part of my work that are not authentic to me and that hurt me. And so I bring that home. I come home sometimes and I'm vulnerable and weak and I'm normally really strong and needy and also a little bit withdrawn. I have walls up. You know, protective walls. And so that can affect our relationship. It can take me time to let that down. I might have some physical aversions. Like it might take me a little while to want to be physically intimate.
Has he asked you to stop?
No. No, he would never ask me to stop.
But the next morning, Emma left us this voicemail.
This morning, my partner held me while I cried and confessed all my fears. This morning, he asked me to cancel all my appointments this week. He's worried I'm getting too fragile, that it's getting to be too much.
Coming up, Emma tells me what she decided to do next. Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. After we recorded our first interview, Emma had a tough night. She was nervous about what she'd shared and haunted about what she'd left out. She sent us a long email, then called and read it over a voicemail, too.
This is what I wish I had shared. I'm afraid. I'm afraid because what I do is illegal and because I have no voice. I can't reach out for support. I'm afraid of being caught by law enforcement. Why did I minimize that with you? I'm afraid of it every day. I'm afraid of having to defend myself, of being put in jail, of losing my children and my ability to support my family, my home, and my freedom. I'm afraid of being physically hurt or killed. I'm afraid of running into someone I know or the family of someone I know and being found out, turned in, stalked, again, having my family impacted and losing everything that matters to me. I'm afraid of my clients finding out about the part that's fake, and I don't enjoy it all, that sometimes I'm grimacing, sneaking peeks at the clock. I'm afraid that someday I will forget to hold my tongue and shout stop.
When she left this voicemail, Emma was about a week away from a planned break. After her boyfriend's request to stop early and cancel her remaining appointments, she did. I talked with her on the phone, too. We agreed we'd talk later in the summer, after she had some time to think about our conversation. When she called me later in August, she said she wanted to share the interview if her identity was protected. She also told me she was scheduling new appointments with clients, and we planned a follow-up interview. I'm calling you Emma, remember?
Yes, it's hard to keep track of all the different names sometimes.
Can we just go back to after the first time we talked and did a long interview? What happened afterwards for you?
Well, I didn't sleep that night at all. And I finally got up at, what was it, like 3 or 4 in the morning. I got out of bed and I got on my computer and I started writing. And I wrote you that letter. And, you know, I'd been working consistently for about 6 months, almost every day, seeing a client. And,
like 7 days a week?
Maybe like, you know, 5 to 6. Huh. And, at least one person. It's just every day. It's just something that I know is going to happen every day, that I'm going to do every day. And so it was, it's a long time. I'd never gone that long without taking a break. And so I think it was already kind of, it was wearing on me. And then just after talking to you, I just realized how much it was wearing on me, how much I needed to get away from it. And I just felt sick.
How did it feel to cancel those appointments?
It was really hard. It was really, really hard. And I wanted to, and yet I'm thinking about my rent, and I'm thinking about, I'm already know I'm going to take some time off. I'm thinking about just the money that I lose just in 1 week. This was actually a big week because it was going to be my last week. So this week was going to pay for my rent and probably my utilities for a month. And it's a big deal to just walk away from that.
So that's like thousands of dollars?
You know, like a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah.
And it's just me taking care of my kids.
How much time total did you take off this summer?
Probably 2.5 months.
How'd it feel?
It was great. It was really good. I did a lot of writing and a lot of reading. I've started to do a lot of research on just the sex work industry and the history of it. But it felt really good every day to just not wake up with that knowledge that I was going to go have an appointment.
Did you miss any of it?
No, not at all. No. Sure, the money, the income. I missed the income. The safety net, the knowledge that as I'm putting money out when I'm buying my food, that there's money coming in to replace that. I mean, it is every time I get paid, I'm immediately thinking this is going to pay for this and this is going to pay for that. And when I'm not bringing in that income, you know, like this summer, I don't feel so good about it. It's hard. It's harder to spend the money. It's harder. I just every time I spend something, I have that little sense of insecurity and a little bit of a fear. Like, am I going to be able to replace this? But no, I didn't miss it.
How did you know the time had come that you needed to schedule new appointments and go back to work?
Well, I came back. I mean, I did have it kind of scheduled, planned in my head of when it would happen. And what happened was I just kind of went almost to the end of what I had because I took that extra week and a half off. And so it was just time because that was it. There's no way I'm dipping into my real savings that I have, you know, over the last few years. I will not dip into that.
Is that the how I'm going to stop doing sex work savings?
No. I think it's the emergency savings. It's if something happens where I have to stop. If I end up, you know, if I get injured and I have to, and I have medical bills I have to pay, or if something happens to somebody in my family.
I think for someone who has never done sex work and to hear that for you it's a financial imperative, and then to also know that you have money saved.
Yeah.
It might be hard to understand why you're continuing to do the work that you...
Because the money I save would last for maybe 5 months. And then what do? Then I'm in the exact same place and I have nothing, and I have no cushion. Then what am I going to do? I'm going to end up on the street. I don't have an IRA. I don't have good health insurance. I don't have anything. And so this is a job. The thing is that I think what's really important and for people to understand about sex work is it's a job. Why does anybody work at Walmart? It'd be great if we could all work specifically and only at something that we loved and we're truly passionate about. And I think if you're young and you don't have kids, this is a great time to make that happen for yourself. But I didn't do that. I didn't create that career when I was 21. I actually got pregnant when I was 21.
How did your first day back feel?
It was actually really easy. It's funny because I didn't know who was going to be on the other side of the door when I opened it. So many people use kind of these generic names, John, you know, Tom, whatever. And I don't, so sometimes I don't always remember just by that exact name, and I didn't bother to look and see exactly who it was I was going to be meeting.
I can't believe you didn't look up the nickname. Like, my God, I would want to know who I'm going to meet.
I knew it was somebody I'd been seeing for a long time, and I knew it was somebody I was going to be real familiar with. I know that sounds strange, doesn't it? It sounds really strange to me, except that this is the thing, is that it's so compartmentalized. It kind of doesn't matter who it is. I just go, I get there, and I open the door, and I just go into this place. And I get my stuff out, and I change my clothes, and I put my makeup on. And I am this person. I am playing a role, and I have my routine, and I know that I'm going to be seeing somebody safe. I know I'm going to connect with them in a certain way. You know, this is going to be fine. I know what I'm going to do. It doesn't really matter who it is.
Did you have any different boundaries after you went back?
No. I've probably maybe a little bit less. My boundaries might have opened up a
really?
Little bit. Yeah, just because towards the end there, I was just so tired and protective that I was just like on a weekly basis, just limiting, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And, you know, like my client said to me my first week back, you need to go away more often. And because I was definitely fresher. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of boundaries to play with because, you know, I'm not an escort. I don't do full service. And there's just a lot that I don't do. I'm pretty just vanilla normal. And, but I was definitely more open and more, just kind of, you know, certain ways that I wasn't allowing people to touch me anymore that I was, you know, was okay with.
That you're okay with now?
Yeah, I don't know how long that's going to last. Yeah.
Have you had any of those feelings of dread since going back?
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's hard to share these things because I can see somebody listening and like, why would you do this thing when you have dread? And even I think about other sex workers listening to this. And that's kind of one of my fears. Another fear with this interview is to have sex workers listening to me and getting mad at me too for representing the downside, the hard parts. But yeah, honestly, if I didn't choose to do it, if I wasn't doing it, I'd just have happy days every day that I know that I'm going to go see somebody. I have some dread. It's usually before, you know, once I open that door and I go into my routine, that goes away. But when I know it's happening, and after that first session, when I got back, that went fine. And I actually came home feeling pretty good. And then my schedule was really filling up. It was like, okay, I'm going to see somebody every day this week. And this was Monday when I had the first person. And by within about 5 hours of coming home from my first session, I started to feel kind of sick. And really, like, oh, every day. Every day. I mean, that was fine, but I have to do this every day. How am I going to do this every day? And now I'm looking at another probably 4 or 5 months at least before I have a break. How am I going to do this every day?
How long do you think you'll be a sex worker?
I don't know. You know, maybe till my kids are out of the house. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard. Working on more than one thing at a time, you know, because it takes time to build something up. So it's going to take longer.
Do you have a dollar amount that you want to have in the bank before you stop? Is there a goal set?
Well, not really in the bank because, like I said, I need to be making the income.
Yeah.
And I probably need to be able to make about $80,000 a year, maybe $90,000. Before taxes, in order to pay my basic expenses and be able to save a little bit. So if I can get to that point or I see that I could, if I was doing this other stuff full time, then I will. So, I absolutely will do that.
So you mentioned taxes, and I just want to make sure I understand your sex work income. Do you report that?
I do. I do report it. Might fudge a little bit, but I actually do.
And it's just like massage income?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, obviously I'm not reporting it as what I'm doing, but I do. It's important because it would leave me vulnerable if I didn't. I have rent, I have expenses. I obviously have to pay them. Mm-hmm. So I can't have any red flags. And so I do.
How's your boyfriend feel now that you're back at work?
I think it's hard for him. I think he feels shame that he can't support me. We don't talk about it a lot, though, because he also understands just what I have to do. So, which is do it.
And Emma, I just want to kind of hear you in your own words or say, like, why did you decide to talk to me?
Well, it all came up with the cheating thing. And then when you asked, I think because I feel so alone, one of the things that's really hard is not being able to talk to anybody. And I'm a mom. I'm around other women. And everybody talks about their challenges, the things that are hard in their life and things that are going well. And I just have this big secret that I can't tell anybody. And I think people need to know because there's a lot of people like me. I'm right there and you just don't know. So that's why.
Coming up, we hear from Emma 2 years later about some big changes in her life.
When it's time for things to change, everything falls in place for it to happen. That is just what I've experienced in my life. That's how my life has always been.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. In the first year I knew Emma, she hesitated to put a dollar amount on what it would take to walk away from her sex work.
So you asked me about how much money in the bank, you know, to stop. And I realized that does exist. If I had enough money to go back to school, like to get a master's, I would really like to get a master's or a PhD in psychology or social work. And if I had enough money to do that, and I had enough money to live for the amount of time that it would take to do that, I would definitely stop. So there is a number out there. I guess it just seems so big that it doesn't seem like it even matters that it exists.
But a year and a half later, when I reached back out to her, that number that felt too big to matter wasn't so far from reach anymore. We recorded this conversation in 2017.
Hello.
I hear you. Can you hear me? This is Anna.
Yeah. Hi.
It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too.
So Emma, at the end of the episode, when you were on Death, Sex, and Money, you had gone back to work, and you were talking about wanting to do other things but not knowing how the finances could work. What's going on now? What are you up to?
So things have changed a lot. I have given up my studio and basically retired from that business. I'm in school and I'm working on my master's.
You're retired?
From that.
Yeah.
From that work. Yeah. Yeah.
What happened that enabled you to do that?
Well, just, you know, I had saved enough, basically. So there's that. There was that piece. And then it just wasn't working anymore for me. It was just too hard. Just the inauthenticity of it. And I got to a place where I felt comfortable enough that I could take care of my family and fund myself to go to school for probably a year and a half or so. So I can basically go working half time at the other work that I do and get by.
Can you tell me about, I think, you know, a lot of people do work for money because they need money. Mm-hmm. And when they get to the place where they want to stop doing that work, but they're trying to figure out if they can afford it and doing budgets, like what was your process of calculating that you could leave this work behind financially? How did you do just the nuts and bolts budgeting of that?
Well, I had an idea of how much money I need to get by, to be able to just pay the bills, and then looked at the timing. Yeah, I mean, it's just a spreadsheet, really. this is how much it costs to live. This is how long I need to supplement my income. This is how much I need to have. And this is what I'm willing to give up of my savings. I guess that's kind of the biggest subjective piece.
Yeah.
Is how much of my savings am I willing to give up? How much do I want to keep in the bank, keep to protect me for an emergency or retirement, you know, not having to work so hard?
I remember that about you, that you like me, are a saver. And so
yeah.
The idea of not having that safety net for yeah. whatever is it can be terrifying. So, like, did it become a moment where it was just the emotions of continuing to do the sex work and the drain of that outweighed whatever anxiety there is around not having that cushion?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have enough of a cushion, and it's a little bit different from that. How do I describe this? I went into this literally, into that work with, oh my gosh, I don't have the money to pay next month's bills. What am I going to do? And then within days, I spoke to this woman and learned about what she did, thought, And within 2 weeks, I was making enough money to pay all my bills. And that was the right thing at that time. And when you and I talked, things started to shift and move in a different direction. And I never pushed it. I just stayed open and started to just pay attention to possibilities. And I just kind of kept taking each step that was put in front of me. It's like, okay, you know, I think that is going in the direction I want to go. So that's what I'm going to do.
I love hearing that because, as you remember, some of our conversations were a feeling of like stuckness or not quite knowing, not quite knowing what that step was going to be.
Yeah, it was really when we talked. There was a big shift. It just kind of opened some stuff up in me. Just it made me realize the struggle that I was having. That I think that there had been a time when I had just been pushing through, and maybe when there's a crisis, we go into a little bit of shock and get a little bit of, we have to numb some of our senses in order to survive the crisis. And that your call was the wake up call. It's like, right, I'm not in crisis anymore. I can start shifting. It's, you know, I've got something. I'm okay. And it's time to start moving.
Did you have a moment when you like, we're ready to close the door on the studio for the last time, you turned around and looked and thought about all that you'd learned about yourself in there?
You know, I definitely stood in my studio and looked around and thought about all that had happened there, all that I'd brought myself through. And yeah, there's a piece of what I was doing there that was really hard, and that was really the not being able to be honest with everybody in my life. Mm-hmm. That was what really ate at me. But other than that, it really was a great gift that I was able to take care of my family and save some money and have flexibility to be present for my family. That was a huge gift.
Do you expect to maintain any kind of relationship with some of your past clients?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There are some people who have become friends, and
And this might seem like an odd question, but I'm just sort of wondering if being physically appealing and attractive, that's no longer a key part of the work that you do for money. Like, have you found, are you giving yourself more liberties at how you take care of your appearance, or, you know, shaving your legs less, or have you done anything, are you doing anything differently in terms of how you look?
Sure. I am shaving my legs less.
Yes.
I just took a shower and I didn't shave my legs.
That is freedom.
I know. so awesome. Go back to long, hairy legs during the winter. But yeah, I am wearing less makeup, I guess, and spending a little less time with that. But I'll still keep plucking my eyebrows.
That was the last time I talked with Emma. All the contact info I had for her, emails and other online accounts, were pseudonyms related to her former career. She and I have not been in touch for several years now. I like to imagine she's finished grad school and that this story is just part of a chapter she's closed the door on. Wherever you are, I wish you well, Emma. And you have my number, so shoot me a text to tell us how you're doing. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. This episode was produced by Katie Bishop and me. The rest of our team in 2022 is Liliana Maria Percy Ruiz, Zoe Azoulay, Afi Yellowduke, Lindsay Foster Thomas, and Andrew Dunn. Our intern is Lily Clark. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Instagram at AnnaSalePix, that's P-I-C-S, and the show is at Death, Sex, Money on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you to Lindsay Malfress in Atlanta, Georgia, for being a member of Death, Sex, and Money and supporting us with a monthly donation. Join Lindsay and support what we do here by going to deathsexmoney.org/donate. I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.